Okay, the next one is a very beautiful verse, verse number 10. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. So tesham, so now he's continuing the previous verse. Those people, tesham, those who are talking about me and reveling in my name and remembering me, satata yuktanam, and constantly their mind is joined. Yukta means joined. So they are constantly focused, constantly their mind is in that direction. Bhajatam priti purvakam, and bhajatam, and they worship me, bhajatam priti purvakam, totally with love. So again, you'll say, why does he want him, me to be praised? Why is God asking, you know, for praise? He's not asking for himself. He is all perfect, all complete. He does not need our praise to make him happy. It is, the idea is that by remembering him and praising him and identifying with him, you become one with him. And you get the inner joy, the inner presence. Just as I have talked about many times, a football player, he looks at, you know, how Joe Montana used to throw the ball and how, you know, Jerry Rice used to catch the ball. And then he looks and watches those videos and he wants to become a quarterback or a receiver. So he identifies and he's again and again running that video to see how they used to run and how they used to throw and what was their throwing motion. So similarly, the more and more you see the Lord and you see his grace and his glory and his love and compassion and countless benefits and countless things that he has done for us and given to us, the more you see it, the more you identify, the more you are filled with love and gratitude and oneness, and the more you feel overwhelmed that, wow, how kind and merciful and loving he is. What a wonderful, you can't even describe that, you know, when you get full of that joy. So he says, bhajatam priti purvakam. Then what happens? Dadami buddhi yogam tam. Dadami means I give buddhi yoga. I give them tam. I give them the knowledge. Buddhi yogam. I give them the knowledge. Yena. By this knowledge. Mam upayanti te. They come. Upa means close. Yanti means they come very close to me. They become one with me. Upa means very close. Like we say Upanishad. Upanishad means, how do you study the Upanishad? By going and sitting under the teacher, getting close to the teacher. So, the Lord says, I give them the knowledge. They cannot themselves reach me, then it is my job. You have done your part, and we'll talk about that a little bit in detail. So again, we said that satata yuktanam, we have already discussed that, you know, a lot in the last verse, that has to become your main focus, has to become your main goal, that I have received a human birth to realize God. And that is my main purpose. Everything else I will do as a father and a mother and a teacher and an engineer and a doctor and a student. Whatever my duties are, I will do, but that is not my main purpose. I have to constantly remember that goal in life. Just as a person who may be in high school and her goal is to be a doctor, you know, maybe a neurosurgeon. So what does she do? From the ninth grade, she'll start taking biology classes, and, you know, studying those things and then reading about the lives of great doctors. And then through undergrad and through graduate school, and her focus is that, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a neurosurgeon, or whatever the, you know, the goal is. And then even through medical school, internship, residency, 10, 15, 20 years of hard work, but she doesn't lose sight of the goal that I have to be a successful, you know, a doctor or a successful surgeon. So similarly, I have to realize that ultimately my goal of life is that, and keep that goal in mind when I do all my activities. And then I said, bhajatam priti purvakam. You have to have a relationship of love with the Lord, not of fear, not of, being afraid that, oh, he's watching over me, not of feeling of paranoia that I am, you know, I'm suffering here because he's throwing down, you know, torturing me and punishing me, but an attitude of love. And you can have different relationships we have talked about. You can have an attitude of a loving father or a loving mother, you know, if you want to worship the mother goddess, or a loving friend or a beloved. Or some people love God as a child, you know, like the baby Krishna or the baby Jesus or the baby Ganpati. So an attitude of love, it is very important. And they say that the more you love somebody, the more you identify. You become one with that. And then you don't need any effort to remember, like a newborn child, you know, or like for us now, say we have a newborn grandchild. You don't need an effort to remember the child. Automatically, spontaneously, your mind goes to that little baby, you know, only 1 or 2 weeks old, but how it captivates the whole house, it is amazing. Everything revolves around that little baby. It's amazing. We were just there back east, and it was such a wonderful to see that little life, you know, and how everything is now centered around that one little. And, you know, I have pictures of her in my iPhone. I go around showing everybody whether they want to see them or not. Why? Because it's spontaneous. So that should be the attitude for the Lord, that spontaneous, continuous remembrance and continuous love for him. No matter where I am, I should not forget him. And the more you remember, then Swamiji in his commentary says, for like your beloved. Now, if there is her picture, whether it is in a wooden frame or a golden frame or a glass frame or in your iPhone or in your computer, once you see the beloved, you get happy. It doesn't matter what kind of frame it is in. It is my beloved's picture or my child's picture or whatever. So similarly, when you see the Lord, you see him everywhere, in the good people, in the bad people, in the criminals, in the monsters, in the everything, in the clean, in the dirt, in the filth. Everything is that one Lord and Lord alone. Then I am also nothing but that Lord. Every part of my body, every cell of my body. So that kind of identification, that is called bhajatam. That is called bhajana. In India, we have this wrong idea. Bhajana means you put on a loudspeaker and you loudly chant, you know, sing the name of God, even though it disturbs all the neighbors and doesn't let them study and they cannot sleep. Doesn't matter, but I am doing the God's bhakti. No, that is not. Gurudev, Swami Chinmananda was very against all that. He says you do not have to have a loud expression to show the whole world what a great devotee of the Lord I am. All you have to do is just sit in your house and remember him. And he's right there. He is with you. He's with you all times. So that is called true bhakti. True devotion is where you love and you identify. Then the Lord says, to such an individual who has devoted his or her life to me, I give them. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. I give them the buddhi yoga. What do they mean by that? What it is meant is that human ability is very limited. I, with my limited body, cannot walk up to him. With my mind and intellect, I cannot reach him. I cannot know him. I cannot describe him. I cannot read about him. Even the books and the scriptures cannot indicate him, cannot describe him. They can indicate him. They can point towards him, but cannot totally describe him, whether it's the Bible or the Bhagavad Gita, or the Upanishads, or the Quran, or the, doesn't matter. So, then what is the use of studying these scriptures? Because these scriptures help you to understand where you should turn the direction of your thoughts, in which direction. So they point out, they are like guideposts, like you see a sign saying Los Angeles, you know, 99 South, Los Angeles, 110 miles. Now, the signpost is not Los Angeles, but the signpost says that if you go on 99 South and then 5 South, ultimately, you will reach Los Angeles. So these books are like the signposts that give us the direction in which we should travel to reach him. But then, as she asked, the human intellect cannot comprehend. The books cannot describe. So they say you come to a point where ultimately you give up. You give up and you say, Lord, this is all I can do. I am an ordinary mortal. I am a useless human being. And I cannot do any more than that. And once you give up, It's not in the sense give up, not does not mean that you become hopeless and you sit like a useless person. What it means is the ego goes away. The perceiver, feeler, and thinker goes away. The idea that I am the doer and I am such a great spiritual aspirant and I know so many Upanishads and I can chant so many mantras and I have done so much service and I have done so many thousand malas. All that I has to go away. And when that I goes away, then he appears. And they say that that individual comes to a point, and if you read the teachings of all the great mystics, whether you read any, whether it's the Christian saints, or you read Eknath Ishwaran, or you read Swami Chanmayananda, or any of these great saints, they say that the individual comes to a point where at that point, then it is like you stand and wait. You say, I have come here, Lord. Now it is your job to open the door. And you just go there and knock, and then you wait. And then when your mind and intellect is ripe, then he will pick you up. In the 12th chapter also, he says, Tesham aham samuddharta mrityu samsara sagarat Bhavami Nachirat Partha Mai Aveshit Chetasam. Mai Aveshit Chetasam. One whose mind and intellect is totally filled with me, then Tesham Aham Samuddharta Mrityu Samsara Sagarat. From this ocean of this world, I pick them up. So then it becomes his job. And you say, I have done my best. I am not capable of doing any more. My mind is filled with you. Now when you think I am ready, you take me. And then you just surrender and say, God, I am yours. That's it. And when that happens, then and only then you kind of merge in him. As long as you stay separate, you will remain separate. But you say, God, you and I are one. I want to just merge in you. I want nothing else but you and you alone. And when that happens, and then the mystics describe it as a darkness before the dawn, because they say that the darkness is maximum just before the dawn. Just before the sun has to rise, it is extremely dark. And then slowly the sun rises. So similarly, a spiritual seeker reaches a place of darkness where the person feels, I am not capable of anything more. And some people actually go through a lot of despair and dejection, because it is like it is within my reach. I have it, but I'm just, you know, I can't. There is like an invisible barrier. And then they give up and they say, I can't do anymore. And then he takes you. Actually, if you read the Eckhart Tolle's Power of Now, The Power of Now, he very beautifully describes the day he realized the truth. He actually has put it in words so beautifully, how he was so depressed and he was almost suicidal. And he must have done a lot of sadhana in his previous life, because he was a very depressed, very unhappy individual. And then one day he was ready to commit suicide. He was just ready to kill himself. And it said he, in that depression, he fell asleep. And he says he doesn't know how long he slept. And when he woke up, he says the world was different. He felt something strange. Something strange happened. And he said, for days and months, I just walked around and I didn't know what I was and what I was doing. And he didn't even know that he had actually realized the truth. He had just woken up to that. And it is said that he went to India and he talked to the rishis over there and he said, what is this I am experiencing? What is happening to me? He didn't know that. And they said, this is God realization. What you are experiencing is that oneness, that Brahman. And it's a very beautiful description of how a person from extreme depression goes to that. It's very. I read that book 2-3 times. It's a very nice book. Everybody should read it. But the rishis, and after that, he spent a lot of time studying the Upanishads and the Buddhist teachings. And then a lot of his knowledge that he teaches has come from the Upanishads and from Buddha, he extensively quotes. So the point is that our intellect has a limited capacity. The intellect can only know things of the world. See, thoughts can only discriminate right and wrong. This is mine and that is yours, and this is not mine. I like this person. I don't like this person. He's my friend. He's my enemy. He belongs to my community, my race. So the mind can only divide. To see that oneness, you have to go at the level of the consciousness. To become a saint, you have to go beyond the mind. Because mind can only divide. Mind cannot unite. And so when you go beyond the mind, that's why they say in meditation, you quieten the mind. And that's what we do. You know, those of you who meditate know that as you watch your breath and as you relax your body and as you chant the mantra, the name of God, you are quietening the mind, quietening the mind, quietening. And when the mind ultimately becomes quiet, then in that silence, you feel the Lord's presence. You experience that inner joy, that inner light, that inner consciousness. And when you, of course, you know, when we meditate, it may happen for brief periods, but for these great masters, they're all the time living in that consciousness. Then that is the state of realization. It can only happen when the mind becomes quiet and the ego is. Ego has to die. Ego has to disappear. And then that sense of I and my is no longer there. Everything is yours. That's why they say, how do you, you know, if you want to make God laugh, you know what you should tell him? Say, this is mine. The moment you say, this is mine, he starts laughing. He says, what is yours? Tera kya? Everything is his. You know, we are just temporarily borrowing it and then start ownership. You know, this is my house. This is my car. This is my child. And I do so much. I have, I and my, give it up and say, everything is yours. The child is yours. The house is yours. The car is yours. I'm just a tenant. And even this world is yours. I'm just here as a tenant. And when my lease expires, I will leave happily. You know, when you have a rented house, you know, after 3 years or 5 years, if you have to leave it, do you cry? No. But if it's your own house that you owned and you spent 25 years and then the bank comes and forecloses on the mortgage, how bad you feel? You know, it's my house, it is gone. But if it's a rented house, it's okay. I know after 3-5 years I had to leave it, so I leave it. So don't think this world is mine. Don't think this house is mine. This family is mine. I'm just a tenant here. I'm here temporarily. Occupying this earth, oh Lord, at your mercy, you have placed me here. When it's time, when my lease expires, I'll happily go. With that attitude, then even death has no fear, you know, for such a person. So that is what the wise person lives with that attitude and becomes one with that. And then it is his job, then give it to him to pick you up. No, that is all. Yeah. All of it is. See, he gives you the right knowledge. Ultimately, the scriptures also came from him. You know, whether it's the Bible or the Bhagavad Gita, everything comes from the Lord. But reading, doing satsang and company of saints and meditation and all helps to quieten the mind and purify the mind. They say the mind has to be purified. What do we mean by a pure mind? Pure mind that does not have negative thoughts and does not have negative desires. So your mind becomes purer. The more pure desires you have, the more pure thoughts you have. So when the mind becomes pure, then it becomes silent. And in that silence, you experience his presence. So you have to first prepare your mind through reading, through satsang, through service, you know, serving the world without ego, through prayer, all that, constant remembrance. But then once your mind becomes silent and becomes pure, then in that silence you experience, because he's always with us. It is because of him that everything is happening. Every breath you take is because of him. So just constantly remembering that in every breath, you know, he's there. I mean, not a single breath can happen without the Lord's presence. So that, but that is, preparation is necessary. It's not going to happen without it. Like in Eckhart Tolle's case, it happened, but he must have done a lot of it in his previous birth. Because in this birth, according to that book, he didn't do much at all. So he must have done it before.